Hello and welcome to Deluded, the Melbourne Demons podcast. Neats, how's it going?
You didn't know how to start.
No, I couldn't think of an intro.
You were quite awkward then. It's so cute. But you seem very chipper, and I think that's just because it's the season end of Deluded.
Well, it's actually not technically the season end, because one thing we're quite excited about is that we will be interviewing Glenn Bartlett
yes,
in a couple of weeks.
Chairman of the Melbourne Football Club. We're very, very excited that Glenn has agreed to come on the podcast so we can ask him some of the much needed and hard-hitting questions about where this club is going in the season that was. I mean, ultimately 2 years out of the finals after making a prelim in 2018, won 17th, won 9th. I know that 9th is obviously an improvement on 17th, but, you know, there are some real questions that need to be asked about what the club is actually trying to do right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll be putting all of those questions to him, and we'll be promoting it on our Facebook page. So, yeah, if you'd like to join the Facebook group, Deluded Melbourne Demons Fan Community, and drop us your questions, that'd be great.
But yeah.
We'll be blanketing your feeds with that. Yeah. What else is there to say?
Well, let's talk about this episode, because we do have a very exciting guest, a very good friend of the podcast who we love, Tom Morris from Fox Footy. And Tom agreed to come on the podcast again for reasons I don't really understand, but he's such a great guy, and we just love chatting to him. And it's funny because on a personal note, you know, we haven't lived in Australia now for what, how many years? 6 years? Maybe 5 years?
Five years.
5 years. And we haven't, you know, living in Mexico, I mean, Mexicans are awesome, and it's culturally very similar. It's a kind of a similar culture to Australia in some ways, but there is something very lovely about like talking to sort of a fair dinkum Aussie bloke and just being like, oh yeah.
Yeah. Dropping some C-bombs.
This person's a flog. Like, it's just great, you know, and it does make me feel a little bit homesick, I'll be honest, because.
Oh, totally. There's just this Aussie irreverence.
Yeah.
That I think is so endearing, and we miss it. And there's something about footy, right? It's
totally.
Such an innocuous subject, you know? It's so easy just to just talk shit about
footy. It is, yeah. And you miss the fact that it's such a galvanizing force in Australia. And also, it's also a very, I don't know, like Australians just, we just have a chilled out nature about us, right? And we really don't, you know, you can roast someone and be best mates with them. And it's just all of those things about the culture I miss, to be honest.
Totally. And you look at, like, you know, like soccer, for example, in Latin America. And obviously, they're obsessed with it just as we are in Australia. But there's a bit more tension and there's a bit more heat. And it's the same in Europe. It's the same in lots of places. And what I love about Australian football is, you know, we're all obsessed with it. We take it very seriously. But at the end of the day, we know it's just a game and a bit of a laugh.
Oh, you know? Totally. Yeah. And we just don't take ourselves that seriously or anything that seriously. So it's super fun. And I it did make me a bit homesick, I'm not going to lie. But let's talk a little bit about the conversation we had with Tom, because it was very interesting, needless to say. And there's a lot of very exciting truth bombs that he drops,
yes.
I would say, about, you know, potentially the future of Josh Marnie, Jack Viney,
Simon Goodwin,
you know, Clayton Oliver's kind of just general personality and vibe and potential. And we really did go through every single trade target.
Yeah. And got a bit of inside goss, which is, I'm not sure if his employer will be all that happy that he's giving us some inside goss.
I'm sure he didn't give us he gave us a fraction of what he actually knows.
He did give us a fraction, but it's a good fraction.
Very good fraction.
I think you'll all be pretty interested. So yeah, we will get into it, but before we get into it, I think we do want to just say thank you to our listeners this year. We love Deluded. It's been our fourth year.
Yeah, it has. And it's funny because, on a sort of more sappy emotional note, it's been a wonderful connection back to Australia, I think. Mm. It is very weird when you live so far away from home, and you know, we were living in DC and now in Mexico, where it's not like living in London, you know, where there's like just Australians everywhere. There are not that many Australians in either of those places. And so it has been this wonderful connection. It's given us this wonderful connection back to Oz. And I know that things have been so hard in Australia this year, particularly in Victoria. I mean, the lockdown laws have been stricter than anywhere else in the world. And it's been so hard for everyone, but it's given us so much joy. So thank you so much to everyone else who's listened to this podcast. And yeah.
Totally. And thank you so much.
As in the football has given us a lot of joy.
Sure. And thank you to all of you who've reached out, sent us a message, told us a little bit about you. Yeah, it's kind of nice having a little bit of a community over 4 years and, you know, seeing a lot of the same names and getting to know some of the personalities. We have these weird cyber relationships, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. Virtual pen pals.
Exactly, exactly. And people from all over the place. You know, we've got listeners from all over the world, you know, expats. So yeah, it's really been a pleasure. So thank you very much. If you're interested in joining the Facebook group, Melbourne Demons, Deluded, the Melbourne Demons fan community, please do. Leave us a review, really for no purpose other than to stroke our egos. You know,
yeah, really. Five star rating, please.
Yeah,
please.
It doesn't really do anything, in fact. So feel free to ignore that, but please join the Facebook community. And without any further ado, I guess we'll head into the Tom Morris interview.
Thanks, guys.
Tom Morris, welcome again to the Deluded podcast.
What a pleasure. I can't believe you invited me back for a second time. You must be short of guests.
Is this your most exciting media commitment of the week?
Yes, clearly. No delay there. on the couch, like Saturday stretch.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to the Gabba tonight for the final, Brisbane versus Richmond. But this is priority number one. So it's a pleasure to be with you.
Your lies are very appreciated on this podcast.
Not lies, and I'm happy to be here. I tell you what, I wouldn't be on any other podcast. I'll give you that much. Deluded podcast is close to my heart after the good chat we had last time. When was that? Probably July, was it? Or?
Yeah, it was.
A few months back.
Yeah. It was.
Back when the season had some hope, but now we're back to where we usually get to as Melbourne supporters.
Yeah, a little bit deluded.
There you go.
So, Tom, give us your honest appraisal. Was this season a success or a failure for Melbourne?
No, a failure. I think I told you from the start of the year, for me, a success would have been to finish eighth or better, and a failure would have been to finish ninth or lower. And I think there was a clear line between making the finals and not. And clearly, it's a continuum as well. So finishing 13th is worse than finishing 10th, which is worse than finishing 9th, and so on. So I think it was a failure. I think there were some positive signs, but ultimately, I wouldn't be judging Melbourne going from 17th to 9th. I'd be judging them from making a prelim in 2018 and then missing the finals the next 2 years. I think that's the better sample size to use. And I think the two losses against Sydney and Fremantle, especially Sydney. Sydney finished 16th and they had some good youngsters, but there's no way that Melbourne should have lost to Sydney on that day. Fremantle played some reasonable footy towards the back end of the year. So although the Ds should have won, I think it's more understandable in windy conditions. The game sort of comes together, but the Swans game was inexcusable, and that's what cost Melbourne. I think if the Demons made if we made finals, I'm not sure we would have made a splash, but even so, I thought there was a clear line, and ninth was a failure, eighth would be a success, and they failed, and it was a frustrating season, wasn't it?
Oh, shocking. No, I completely agree with you. I think the losses against Frio and Sydney were inexcusable, and I have to say, Tom, I'm as critical at least of the Frio loss as I am the Sydney loss. Like, I understand that Frio's got some good young kids coming through, but like the Dogs did not lose to Frio, you know, like, and the Dogs did like finished in eighth position. So like, it's not, you know, or seventh or whatever they finished, but it's not like they just had one job to do, which was to beat this team, which has some promise, but is ultimately not as good as them. And I think that it's pretty excusable.
That's right. And only beating two teams in the top eight. So for me, it's not so much about the ladder position, because we could have fluked our way into eighth, right? Say the Dogs had just lost out of nowhere. But I don't think that changes the fundamentals of the season, which are that we were an average team, not good against the top teams for the most part, and clearly have gone backwards from 2018 with a pretty young list and some of the best players in the competition. So
It's a good point. I think whoever finishes eighth, I mean, we'll wait and see what happens with Collingwood and West Coast, but whoever finishes eighth normally doesn't win. They're normally making the numbers. But Melbourne finished exactly where I think we deserve to finish. You know, as you said, like we didn't really beat teams ahead of us. I know we beat Collingwood, but we didn't. And when we lost to some teams below us, it would have been lucky had we made the eight. And I think there's some big question marks over the coaching group, because the club has been rebuilt. You know, like the 17 football department staff changes last year. The list, I think, is in good shape. Financially, the club is actually in the best shape it's been, I think, probably ever. So what's going wrong? I mean, it's that eternal question, and there's so many different theories.
No, I couldn't agree more. I think that there are like fundamental Either they've overrated their list, or maybe the players are mentally weak, or there is a problem with the coaching staff, or there's something not right if the club can have everything, all the fundamentals in place, but then still not be able to perform, I think.
Let's talk about the coaching team.
Tom, yes, let's do it.
In your opinion, will Simon Goodwin be the coach of Melbourne next year?
That's a great question. In my opinion, I think he will, but I don't think it's absolutely locked in at this point. There's a few factors here. So my opinion is that Simon Goodwin should be under significant pressure to keep his job. The news part of my brain can tell you that the club can afford to sack him if it wants to. There's a one-off clause or a one-off allowance from the AFL this year, which permits clubs to have football department redundancies not come out of the soft cap. So essentially, if the club, not just the football department, if the club can afford it, they can sack whoever they want, really. That's what Gold Coast did with Dean Solomon. That's what North Melbourne did with Jade Rawlings. And these are assistant coaches. But that also extends to physios. It extends to heads of football. It extends to recruiters, whoever else is in the football department, the soft cap. So Melbourne, and the reason Melbourne could afford to do this if it wanted to is because the club is not an unassisted AFL club, and it will remain unassisted if it raises, I think, another $250,000 by Christmas. So the AFL doesn't have an input into what it does unless it is assisting the Demons, if that makes sense. It's not assisting the Demons, so Melbourne can do whatever they want. They can act unilaterally. My sense is that because it's been COVID-19 and because it's been a difficult year where you can't train as a full group, and I think Simon Goodwin gets one last mulligan. I don't think he can afford another one next year. But I definitely don't think he's absolutely safe at the moment. Gary Pert's doing a review of the football department, which he was going to do anyway at the end of the year. And I think Simon Goodwin's name will be brought up pretty heavily in these discussions, and we'll probably know more in the next few weeks. But I would be surprised if they sacked him at this point, but it's not out of the question.
And will Josh Marnie be the head of the football department next season?
I don't think so. I think he's likely to be the scapegoat, fair or unfair. He's been there for 11 or 12 years. People keep mentioning to me that Melbourne need to make changes at the top of their football department to get some adjustment. Now, it might be a bit unfair. He's not a coach. He's the football boss. But Alan Richardson's sitting right there, who I understand has aspirations to be the football boss, which is more of a managerial role overseeing the football department. So I'm not saying it's right or wrong with Josh Marnie, but I think he's, at this point, he looks likely to be the scapegoat for another poor season. And if it's Simon Goodwin, that's a huge story. But I still think Josh Marnie is a big story as well. He's been there for a long time. He's been through the mud. The club's come out the other side. He was disappointed to miss out on the CEO job a couple of years ago, and Gary Pert got it. But I just feel like they need to make, or I feel like, and I know they feel like they need to make some football department changes. And simply shuffling a couple of assistant or development coaches around probably doesn't do the trick. You probably need to put the flag in the ground and make a big change. Simon Goodwin would be a huge change. Probably Josh Marnie is the next biggest one.
Interesting.
And what about...
What do you guys think?
Well, we have some...
some clear views on this topic.
Yeah. Do I think that Josh Marnie should go? Absolutely. I mean, yeah. I just don't think that...
I thought Josh Marnie should go every year for the past 10 years, I'd say.
You know, I've actually thought that, yes. And it's... I think for a number of reasons. I don't think he's a particularly savvy or clever negotiator. Is the number one thing. I think that he could have gotten a lot better deals for Lever, for example. I thought that it was absurd the way that he went out and trashed Watts and then tried to offload him.
Definitely the right call in hindsight. The trashing your commodity before selling is a strange ploy.
I just think it's like poor business.
North Melbourne did with Ben Brown. It's bizarre.
Yeah, strange. And so I don't understand that logic. I think it's poor. I think he's got really poor negotiation skills is actually one of the main things I would say. And so for that reason, I thought that Josh Marnie should have gone a long time ago. Yes.
Right. And the listeners have heard your views on Simon Goodwin. ad nauseum.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, look, like, Kieran, I could say
give me a little 30-second spiel on your views on Simon Goodman.
I have described Simon Goodman in many terms as, like, you know, for me, he seems like just, I think about, like, really excellent organizations which are really well-run and really professional and you know, that, like, that's sort of my benchmark for success. Are you running an organization which is professional, where the leadership looks like they know what they're doing and everybody's on the same page? Simon Goodman, for me, feels like a middle management type character, like Ross from accounting, who's, like, you know, drunk at the Christmas party. You just need to, like, he doesn't seem like a leader. He seems like Ross from accounting. And so I'm, like, not really particularly, you know, enamored by him or his efforts.
I don't I enjoy that description.
That is how I see it.
We're not getting invited to any Melbourne Football Club functions anytime soon.
I mean, I don't really.
That's okay. Well, you can host the Mexican supporters, Melbourne supporters in Mexico function.
Exactly. That will be quite a fruitful event, I'm sure. But
let's move to player movement then. So, Tom, we have a lot of names to just throw at you.
Yes, no worries. I'll do the best I can. I'm not a crystal ball, but I'll tell you what I know.
Okay, well, we'll take it as gospel. So, Jack Viney. Jack Viney, straight off the top. You wrote today that you think he'll be staying at Melbourne?
Yeah, I think so. Well, and that's based on Geelong believing he's going to stay. So, okay. Geelong's the main suitor for him. Geelong hasn't been told officially, but Melbourne's, like, his manager, Tom Pretoro, he's not negotiating with Geelong. He's not saying, hey, Geelong, what do you got here? He's just negotiating purely with Melbourne. And when the manager's negotiating purely with Melbourne, the player, in my experience, 99% of the time stays because they get a deal done. To give you an idea, this story was sort of built off, I mean, I'm not the Washington Post or the New York Times, but this story was built off five sources, which is about two or three more than I usually have. But two were inside the club, two at the Cats, and then another one who's familiar with the negotiations. And all of them said that Viney is either definitely staying, somewhere between Viney is definitely staying or highly likely to stay. Okay. So that to me, that's probably enough. One of them said if Viney doesn't stay, that you can shoot me in the head. So that was pretty effusive. I just I think what happened here was that Melbourne lowballed Jack Viney initially. They gave him a pretty ordinary deal. And without knowing for sure, Viney and his manager would have gone, hang on, like, my name is synonymous with the club. I finished third in the best and fairest 2 years in a row. I've won it a couple of years ago. I think I finished second a couple of years ago as well. Like, I am a central player in this team and you're offering me that. Yeah. So, no, let's just see who else is interested. And then they go, okay, Geelong, would you be interested in Geelong? Go, oh, geez, now you mention it. Maybe. This is actually how it works. Oh, okay. Let's have a think about it. Let's have a chat. And they have a few discussions and then, meanwhile, simultaneously, the manager goes back to the Melbourne and says, look, Geelong are interested here. Like, we need to up this deal. And they go, and the story comes out in the media about Geelong being interested, written by Jay Clark. So it's a bit of posturing as well. This is a bit sort of behind the curtain stuff, but I find it interesting because I'm a nerd in the media. Yeah. And then in the end, the manager for Viney and the club reach an arrangement. I think it'll probably be a four-year deal. It might be tomorrow. It might be next week. And if it falls over from now, I'd be surprised. But they're pretty close. And they're close enough in what they believe is a suitable deal for no other club to be involved. And that's why the Cats are no longer involved at all. So, yes, I think he probably stays. But that's how these sort of things work. Like, it's a game of nuance. It's a bit of a PR battle as well. Mm. And it's also just holding, like, the club needs to hold the player to account. The club can't give too much to the player just because the player wants it, just because his name's Viney. Equally, Viney's got to expect that he's going to be paid accordingly because he's been an important player for a long period of time and he will continue to be an important player for a period of time. So I think he's got to find that right balance. But also there's confusion about list sizes and total player payments and a whole lot, which further complicates things.
Got it. All right, Clayton Oliver, because somebody reported on Footy Classified that apparently he was dissatisfied and unhappy at the club. Is that just...
Well, no, it's not rubbish. He was dissatisfied and he was frustrated about finishing fifth in the best and fairest, which to me is like, Clayton, come on, mate. Like,
yeah,
get over yourself. Clayton Oliver, it's been described to me, is a bit like a soccer player. And I mean this in the most, I'm not trying to be xenophobic in any way or generalize what soccer players are like. European soccer players, they throw the toys out of the cot. You know, if a left winger gets put at left back, he's going, what are you playing me at left back for? It's ridiculous. Gets subbed at half time and doesn't even watch the rest of the game and walks down to the rooms and throws his boots up against the wall. Like, this sort of stuff happens all the time. Just got to watch All or Nothing on Amazon with Jose Mourinho. There's players cracking the shits everywhere. And Clayton Oliver's a bit like that. And it's part of what makes him good, because he's so determined and so driven and so keen to be the best. But when things don't quite go his way, he just cracks the shits a little bit. And he came fifth in the best and fairest, which to me is like, that he probably could have come fourth. Probably wasn't in the top three. I think Steve May and Viney and Petrarca were better. Langdon, Oliver could have flopped.
I agree with that.
Them, but like, it's not the end of the world, really. But he was, if you watch his speech to the best and fairest, he was frustrated and clearly flat. He's no good public speaker anyway, so you've got to take that into account. But I can't imagine Melbourne trading him. No, I can't imagine Melbourne trading him. There's always unrest at clubs, and it's the same at Essendon now on an amplified level. There's always unrest at clubs for good players who are playing in clubs that don't play finals, because they believe they're playing good enough football to be challenging for a flag. And there's that constant tension and battle there. But I can't imagine the D's trading Clayton Oliver.
Okay, someone who is a better public speaker, Angus Brayshaw. Where does his future lie?
I like Angus Brayshaw, and he's a little bit like Oliver as well, not quite to that level, but like, he gets put on the wing. What am I doing on the wing? Like, I should be in the middle, you know, whereas Joel Selwood will play back pocket if he has to, you know. Like, there's a little, I won't say the footy club, but there's a footy club, not Geelong and not Melbourne, that has a Joel Selwood rule. What would Joel Selwood do in this situation? Oh, geez, he'll just cop it and put his head over the ball and move on. It's a really good way to look at it, I think. And Angus Brayshaw can get a little bit narky when he's not playing where he wants. There's always rumours of Fremantle because he's one of his brothers is there. There's also sort of a perception that like Brayshaw, Petrarca, Oliver and Viney, you probably can't fit all of them in the same midfield. I disagree. I mean, you're not going to play all three in the same midfield the entire time. I would be very disappointed. I don't know, but I'd be very disappointed if Angus Brayshaw was traded. I think I'm a big Angus Brayshaw man. He's the sort of player you say, hey, mate, you're a gun. You're a gun. Go and be a gun today. Go and be a superstar, and he'll go play well. Like, just pump him up, and he'll be fine. So I'd of all the players in the club that are realistically even a chance to be traded, so obviously Gorn's not going to be traded, and Stephen May and a couple of others, I'd be very disappointed if Brayshaw was let go.
Yeah.
Okay, what about another midfielder who's declined a bit, Nathan Jones? So you've reported that he might be staying on in a kind of a hybrid role?
Yes, hybrid assistant coach player role. This, again, was put forward by his manager to the club. Sort of a view around the AFL that this is going to become more regular because the soft cap is coming down, which is the football department tax, and therefore you can't have as many coaches in the club. So you've got to think of other ways to get development into young players. And one of the ways you can do that is to have a player on your list that's been around for a long time but wants to move into coaching that isn't necessarily going to get consistent games but can still have a role in the football club sitting at a laptop with a first-year player going through vision. That's what Nathan Jones would be. That's what Sean Burgoyne will be next year. That's what Sam Mitchell was a couple of years ago at West Coast. So it's looking likely. I mean, the club has to decide whether they want to do it or not because it still takes up a list spot, but it does save money. That means they don't have to have as many coaches in the football department so they can pay the coaches they want more. So the money that Jones will be paid will come out of the salary cap, but yet he'll be fulfilling a role that is beyond just playing. I'm probably 6 weeks ago, I was thinking that Jones should absolutely retire. Like, he should not be at the club next year. You've got to be ruthless. You've got to cut the cord. And now I'm thinking to myself, you know what, like, who does it hurt if he hangs around? And if he doesn't get to 300, he doesn't get to 300. But you got, I don't know how many spots are going to be on the list. You've got 38 or 40 or 42 spots on the list. I still think he's a good kick of the footy. And if he gets to 300, it probably pays the right amount of respect to someone who has been at the club in the most tumultuous time in Melbourne's history. Like, how bad have Melbourne been since when he started in 06 to now? So I think it makes sense. But he just can't be guaranteed games. And I think if he went on to next year, he would know that he's not guaranteed games of footy and he would be a depth player. But that's okay. I think it would make sense. Do you guys like the idea or not?
You know, I don't mind it because I do think if he plays 6 to 8 games, that would be fine. He's a handy player. He's fine. And yeah, you know, I do think there's something nice about us looking after our old are all players. I mean, what Hawthorn did in that final round with Stratton and Puapolo was just just beautiful, you know. And
And Roughhead before as well. And we didn't like the James McDonald saga still looms large in a lot of Melbourne supporters' minds. The way that they treated McDonald was disgraceful. So you'd hope that that Jones can go around again. If he doesn't reach 300, that's okay. He's been given an opportunity to be there for the year, and his form justifies that he can get in. But there's also a chance that Melbourne has an ordinary year and they're out of finals contention with 6 games to go. He's already played 3 earlier in the year, and all of a sudden you can give him the last 3, and there could be a celebration at the end of the year when there's nothing else to celebrate. So that's probably the cynical perspective, but it's all absolutely a possibility. So I've warmed to it. Yep.
Totally.
I'm a little bit more ruthless and corporate than I think both of you. But anyway,
I have doesn't surprise me.
It's no, I have no heartstrings. That's the fact. No. The actual truth is I don't mind the player coach setup and scenario. I actually think that makes total sense, and you know, and that's important. Look, I think the issue with the James McDonald situation was the lack of transparency, right? Like Melbourne were not transparent with him, and that's the fundamental problem. And obviously they didn't really, they had this huge power vacuum, and then they had no leaders beneath him, and there was that whole issue. But personally, like, I don't, again, call me callous, and maybe this is, I've become very American. I don't, these players aren't doing it for free. Like, I get that they're sticking around these clubs during very difficult times. They're also getting paid absurdly well. They're getting to be the captains of these incredible football institutions. And I kind of just think it's like a, I don't know, like, call me a capitalist. It's just like a decision that you make that's based on economic certainty. I don't know. That's my opinion.
Yeah. That's probably a pretty widespread view. I think that's tangible. What's intangible is the culture that it allows to promote. So when the next old player is coming through, they want to stay at the club because they feel like they're going to be sent off the right way. But it's hard to measure that. You know, it's very hard to measure exactly why that is. I get, like, in many ways, clubs treat players like pawns on a chessboard, and in many ways they should be treated like pawns on a chessboard. You can move them around, it's a business, everyone understands it's a business. But also, the very best clubs, Richmond of the last 15 years, Richmond, Geelong, Hawthorn, the ones who've won multiple flags, West Coast, Sydney, they've treated players like humans and people with emotions, and they've succeeded from it. Now, I'm not sure they've succeeded because of this, but I'm sure that it's had an impact in the way they've gone about it and won flags.
Yeah, so. No, I take your point. All right.
So another veteran who's in a bit of trouble, Tom McDonald. So is it your mail that he will be staying at the D's?
Oh, I saw that this morning, that Melbourne, he still wants to stay at the D's.
Yeah.
But this is just classic. Like, this is what happened in the trade period. Tom McDonald wants to stay at the D's and Melbourne want to keep Tom McDonald. All of a sudden, we're 4 days into the trade period, an offer comes for Tom McDonald and they go, well, okay, what do you reckon? So I wouldn't read too much into it now. You see it every year. Like, I saw it with Jesse Hogan at Melbourne. Jesse Hogan, Melbourne is open to the idea of Jesse Hogan moving. Jesse Hogan is open to the idea of moving. But in fact, the conversation's been had that you're going. You know, they always dial it back, the clubs.
Yeah.
My goal is that if there's a suitor for Tom McDonald that can assure him games and a 2-year contract and can pay him some of his current deal, that a deal will get done and everyone will be happy with that. But until there is a suitor, he's staying. And at the moment, there's no real strong suitor, which makes it awkward for Melbourne and Tom McDonald if he can't get a game and if he's not in Simon Goodwin's plans.
Yeah.
Because Melbourne would have to pay out a solid portion of the salary most likely, right?
Yeah, not as much pay out, just pay. Like what happened with Jack Watts? So if Tom McDonald's on $700,000 a year, and a club comes, let's say North Melbourne comes and says, we'll take Tom McDonald, we'll give you a third round pick and we'll pay $400,000 at that salary. And Melbourne go, God, do we really want to pay someone $300,000 a year for 2 years to not be at our football club? Well, North Melbourne aren't really challenging, so yeah, we'll do it.
Yeah.
But if it's, I don't know, I'm trying to think, if it's Collingwood, I might say, we don't really want to pay Tom McDonald to potentially cost us a flag.
Yeah.
So we're going to hold on to him. So it depends what happens with the club. So when Jack Watts went to Port Adelaide were no good. So it didn't hurt Melbourne paying some of that salary. Just like Adelaide are no good and they're paying some of Josh Jenkins' salary to beat Geelong. But you'll never see two teams in the window paying someone else's salary. So that comes into it as well.
Interesting.
Makes sense. It's hard to imagine Tom McDonald being the thing that cost us the flag.
But yeah, I know. Well, I think he should be playing in defence. But, I mean, his 2018 was so good. But, I looked at it the other day. He signed at the perfect time. I don't know what you call it in the business world or in shares or economics or whatever you want to. You guys are smarter than me. But, like, where he was at the top, absolute top of his worth, he signed a deal worth about $750,000 a year on August the 10th, 2018. Like when he was kicking bags of 5 and 6 and Melbourne were humming and like hunting a final spot. And since then he's just fallen off the cliff. So I think he should be playing in defence, but I don't know how you fit him in defence with Stephen May and Jake Lever back there. So who knows?
Well, someone who whose manager didn't do quite as an astute job is Braden Pruce's manager. So is Brett, which is that deal to this day, the Tyson for Pruce deal, for me, I just sit there thinking, like, North didn't need another slow inside midfielder. Melbourne didn't need another, like, sort of, you know, like, bumbling, like,
we just didn't need another ruckman.
So why did the deal happen at all? Anyway, putting that to one side.
Good question. Can I answer that question?
Yes, please. Oh, I love that. Yeah.
So Melbourne thought at the end of 2018, as we all thought, that they were in the premiership window. And the only thing that was going to cost Melbourne at the end of 2018 was if Max Gawn, arguably the most valuable player, got injured. So they didn't want to lose a flag because it's like a soccer goalkeeper. You've got a gun goalkeeper. You lose that goalkeeper, you're done for the year. So they didn't want to have Tom McDonald taken away from forward, where he just kicked 60 goals. They didn't want to – Sam Wiedemann was too young to play in the ruck and not quite big enough. So they needed to get an insurance policy, and they were happy to give up a bit to get him, thinking they were in the window for a flag. Didn't turn out like that, clearly. And Braden Pruce was happy to go because he was getting paid more money and he wasn't getting played at North Melbourne. Melbourne had said to him, we would like to play you with Max Gawn. I think they did it 7 times across 2 years or something ridiculous like that, like nothing. And it clearly didn't work. And now he's going to be traded. So that's sort of that. I can sort of see Melbourne's views there. I mean, Melbourne didn't need Dom Tyson. They thought that the only way they're going to lose the chance of the flag is if Gawn got injured, so they had to get someone else in. It was sort of a horses for courses. But now that they've got Luke Jackson, they don't really need another sort of backup ruckman type.
Yeah.
Totally. I think Melbourne's decision made sense. I don't think Pruce's decision made sense. No. And look, I'm glad that he's finally going to get an opportunity at Sydney or GWS or something like that.
Surely if you're an elite footballer, you want games. Like, you want to be able to play. But I don't know what his other offers were. He might not have had any more offers than Melbourne. So he might have been like, you know what? It's better than what I've got at the moment. This is all I've got. And he was on good money at Melbourne. Again, like a reserve goalkeeper, if you're on good money and you're sitting there, like your life, and what you were saying before, like your life is still pretty good. You're just not playing.
Exactly. Totally.
Knowing you can also move from there. So he's got 2 years left on a deal. But like the Giants and the Swans both want a ruckman. So I'd be shocked if he didn't go there. I'd be interested to see how he goes as a full-time ruckman every week. Mm. Like, we haven't really seen him be a ruckman every single week, so that'll be a close watch.
Yeah.
So Tom, the other side of the ledger, the players who might be coming in. So Isaac Smith, how serious is Melbourne about Isaac Smith?
Yeah, serious, but I don't think Isaac Smith is that serious about Melbourne. I mean, again, things can change, but I mean, he's been offered a 2-year deal at Hawthorn with I've been told a simple trigger for a third. So a simple trigger for a third year would be like 5 games in that second year or something that he's clearly going to be able to tick off. And the only reason he doesn't is because if he doesn't need or something like that. So it's exactly what Melbourne need, another winger. I mean, it was, in my mind, I don't know if I spoke to you about it, like it was ridiculous that Tomlinson was ever going to play on the wing this year. Like, it was never. I've seen Tomlinson play since he was 13 years old, and he's never been a winger in his life. He's been a third defender, and he's been a third forward, and he's played a bit in the midfield occasionally, sort of as a big body. But he's never been a winger because he's not a runner. He ticks the legs over. Like, he's an endurance athlete, but he's not quick, and he's not going to break the lines like Ed Langdon would do in the other wing. So it's fine to get him, but don't pretend he's going to be a winger. So he's going to be down the defence. They want another winger. Now, is Isaac Smith the right man? Probably. I think so, but he's not the right age. Like, he's pretty durable, but he's 31, he's 32 before next season starts. I'd be happy to get him, but I'd be surprised if you went to Melbourne, albeit, you know, if they offer a ridiculous deal, then things can change. If they offer him 4 years, then things could absolutely change, but it would be pretty irresponsible to offer someone who's going to be 32, I think, in December, a 4-year deal.
Totally. Well, What about Saad? What do we think about him?
Oh, I love Adam Saad. I love Adam Saad.
So do I.
Adam Saad is like, I'm saying this in the right way. I'm not a religious person myself, but he's a Muslim and he is a consummate professional. Like, he doesn't drink. Like, he lives the values of that religion. That's probably the best way to describe it. Just like Bashar Hooley does.
Yeah.
So he's not a flight risk in any way. You know, there's players that come with baggage. You know, Hogan went to Fremantle with baggage. You know, even Buddy went to Sydney with baggage. And sometimes baggage is mental illness. So it's not necessarily actually a deliberate doing of the person that's going. But he comes with no baggage. Like, he's traveling light. He comes with his toothbrush. He comes with his toothpaste and like his iPad. That's all he's got.
The
model citizen. He's missed one game in 3 years.
Wow.
He's got speed. And speed is something that Melbourne desperately need. Now, I think Melbourne would play him on a wing, not necessarily half-back. Or they'd play Christian Salem on a wing and him at half-back. Either way, he's exactly what the Ds need. But at the moment, he's just... He's just trying to deal with Essendon. He wants to go to a club which has really strong direction and gives him a chance of success. He's in his mid-20s. He's about to sign his longest-term deal.
That's Melbourne.
I can't see why. Like, knowing that, I can't see why he'd come to Melbourne, because it's not like Melbourne is as bad as Essendon at the moment, but it's not like they're, you know, ready to go. So I think it's... I think it's a long shot at the moment, but it's exactly what Melbourne need.
Yeah. What about something that I don't think Melbourne needs, which is Jared Pollock? Is that true?
Oh, well, as a player, like, he might be a little bit what we need, like a bit of outside run. But I'll tell you what, there's a reason why Port Adelaide were happy to get rid of him and North Melbourne were happy to get rid of him.
Yeah.
He's not exactly a great team player. So I would be steering clear of Jared Pollock, and that's probably putting it lightly.
Yeah.
Okay. Couple of other North Melbourne options. It's amazing how many names are in the frame.
Higgins.
Now, I haven't heard anything about Melbourne being linked to Higgins, but he seems to be the kind of player that might be useful for us, although Nita disagrees.
No, this is Kieran's wishful thinking, but yeah. No, maybe like...
Is it wishful thinking because... Go on.
I think 5 years ago, Higgins would have been a wonderful option, but Higgins he's is just still so a good player. Old.
Yeah, he's a good player now, but you've got to... Gonna weigh up the list. If we're trying to win a flag next year, get him in.
Yeah.
And are we trying to win a flag next year? It's like, well, you sort of yes-ish. It's like, yes, maybe. Are we? I don't know. I don't know where we're at. Ask them.
I don't think we're trying to win a flag next year. Personally, like, call me a bit more like cynical, but I think we're just trying to make finals next year. To be perfectly honest with you, which is why I'm not big on the Higgins option. What about Ben Brown?
I think Ben Brown would be a good pickup. Because I think Ben Brown would realign us a little bit. Now, he had a terrible season this year for North, but they were kicking it to him like Bataki Hams. Like, they were spraying it everywhere. So I think as long as we don't have to pay too much for him, he's out of contract, so you'd have to trade for him, then I think he would be a good pickup. He would also help alleviate that gap between Max Gawn and Luke Jackson as that sort of backup ruck forward. When we lose Bruce and give Jackson further time to develop. I like the way that Ben Brown, he aligns teams. Like, you know, there's someone to kick to down the line. He struggled this year, but he's a model citizen. You know, like, he's been pretty durable aside from this season. I think he's worth looking at the very least and probably worth offering a 3-year deal to.
Right, because we've got, I think our top pick is 24 or so this year. To me, that feels about right. Maybe he kicked 60 goals 3 seasons in a row until the last season, where he had the loss of a child, injury issues, and just playing in just an appalling team. So yeah. I think he's worth pick 24. I don't know if we're interested though.
Do you like it?
Yeah, I actually do. I think we need another. Well, we need forwards, and we need forwards who are like athletic, and you know, I don't know. I think it'd actually be a pretty good decision.
Yeah, he's a straight kicker as well, which helps. Like, he doesn't miss really. But he's Simon Goodwin said in the last press conference of the year, we asked him. I can't remember who asked. Peter Ryan from The Age asked him, "What do you need in the trade period?" And I would have thought he was going to say outside run, but he actually said forward of centre. You know, the midfield. Like, look at the midfield. Oliver and Petrarca are rated as two of the best midfielders in the comp. Viney's one of the hardest midfielders in the comp. Gawn is one of the best ruckmen in the comp. the defence actually held up really well. Mm-hmm. I think Stephen May was incredibly unlucky not to be in the All-Australian squad, let alone team. So, like, the building blocks are in place, but the forward, it just seemed dysfunctional in certain games. You know, the frustration of not being able to get it inside 50 and score was just palpable, whatever the word is. So I think Ben Brown would help help bridge that gap.
Well, on that same note, three other forwards, Wright, yeah. Ryacek and Gunston. Do you think any of them could be an option for Melbourne?
I'd love Gunston. Best and fairest of Hawthorn 48 hours ago. But Gunston's not going to Melbourne. The only way Gunston gets traded is if Hawthorn say to him, we want to trade you, and he'll say, oh, okay, we'll put me to a team that's in the premiership window, which wouldn't be us. So Collingwood's the team interested in him. But I can't see Hawthorn trading a best and fairest. Like, that's just a great way to have an uprising. Ryacek would be good. I'd like Ryacek. Yep. And who's the other one? Who's the first one you said?
Peter Wright. Less decorated, perhaps.
Yeah. Less
decorated. More realistic.
Peter Wright's just, I mean, there's a reason he didn't play a game for the Suns this year. Yeah. He's not competitive. Like, he doesn't bring the ball to ground. So, I'd take Peter Wright on a list, but I wouldn't be giving up anything for him. He's on about $550,000 a year. So, it's like what I was talking about before with his salary. Well, they have to pay that to keep him past his first contract when he's actually playing games, which is what the Suns have sort of had to do, and that's what's caused some issues for them from a salary cap perspective down the track. But I wouldn't be chasing Peter Wright, no.
Yeah.
Okay. Tom, any names we've missed? I know you love breaking news on the podcast.
I'm trying to think to myself. I'm trying to think of some sort of outside run. No, I can't think of any off the top of my head.
We've covered the AFL.
Yeah.
So. I would like us in 12 months' time to throw the Atlas at Zach Merritt. I reckon that would be a great pickup. He's exactly what we need. He's good on the inside, good on the outside. He's skillful, durable, good leader. He's a restricted free agent, so you wouldn't have to trade for him. I just think it's put this in the time capsule in 12 months' time. I reckon bring this little conversation out. I reckon Zach Merritt will be at the top of everyone's wish list.
Right. And we'll have locked down Jared Pollock in the meantime. So.
Yeah, Pollock on a one-year deal. Yeah.
That's amazing. Awesome. Cool. Perfect. Thanks so much, Tom.
No worries at all.